Hey everybody and welcome to InterviewCast. Finally, we are back to a normal schedule, a semi-regular schedule here on Inside the Ropes. But this week we have a very special guest. I want to make sure that we waited to the schedules lined up so we could speak to him. It is one half of the ROH World Tag Team Champions, one third of the ROH Six-Man Tag Team Champions, PCO. Pretty fascinating story. Even if you don't watch ROH or you don't watch indie wrestling, PCO used to be in the Quebecers. He was Jean-Pierre Lafitte in 1995. Had a big career in wrestling throughout the 90s and the early 2000s, and then we just kind of stopped hearing from him. And he reinvented himself in his late 40s, early 50s as this maniacal French Frankenstein. It blew up last year, and it's culminated in him now being with ROH, being a double champion, and heading into the ROH New Japan Supercard, when he and Brody King take on Tangaloa and Tama Tonga in a winner-takes-all match for the IWGP tag titles and the ROH tag team titles. So a lot for me to say in one sentence, but it's been really great to talk to him. I hope you guys are going to enjoy the interview. It's about 40 minutes that we talk. We talk about the journey of him becoming the PCO character, how that comeback happened, why he thinks he didn't maybe have as much success earlier on in his career, working WrestleMania 25 years ago in Madison Square Garden to now working there again for ROH. It's a pretty fascinating interview and a pretty fascinating tale. And I even asked him at the end about Brawl for All and how he felt about competing in that tournament back in 98. So it's a pretty interesting interview. Hope you guys enjoy it. Sorry that we've been a little bit everywhere, all over the place with the schedule, with the tour, and then Sondra being ill. So, but we are back on schedule, so we should hopefully be able to deliver all the stuff in the days that we promise it. Today, you've got PCO here in InterviewCast. Tomorrow, Sondra and I are back with Inside the Ropes, where we'll talk about, no doubt, the Kofi Kingston journey from last night's SmackDown, which seems to have divided opinion. Some people are really enjoying the sort of, obstacles that Kofi Kingston's having to overcome. Some people are not enjoying it and are saying that it's there's various opinions that we'll go into tomorrow, but I hope you enjoy the interview. And before we do go to the interview, I just want to give you this absolute nugget of gold from Steve Gunn, you know, the guy I'm seeing. He and I were sitting the other week and I said, oh, I'm gonna PCO on the podcast, and he was like, yeah, he was like, you know, I only realized recently that, you know, that she's Maurice's dad. He's Maurice's dad. And I was like, what? Because Maurice is called Maurice Ouellet, he thought that Pierre-Carl Ouellet meant that he was Maurice's dad. And I was like, but Ouellet's like Smith in French. It says, like, everybody's got that name. And he was like, oh, I didn't realise. So, you know, that's why I guess I do the podcast and he does not. But it cracked me up. I did tell PCO about that when we went off the air and he laughed. And he said that sometimes people come up to him shows and say, you know, you can't be the same PCO as from back in the day, and he'll joke with people, say, no, I'm his younger brother. So he has fun with it as well. I hope you check it out and enjoy it. Please let us know, as always, when we do these interviews, the things that make them happen and the things that make them keep going is that we talk about them, and that the guys see on social media that people are talking about them. So, you know, tag Inside _ the Ropes, tag me, KennyMC1985, and tag PCO at PCO is not human. And let us know what you think of the interview. I think it's a really good one. It's a really interesting story. It's a great comeback. Here he is, the man known as PCO. And we're back here on Inside the Ropes, and I'm very pleased to have this guest on. He is a man who was a wrestling tag team champion in the past. We thought he'd retired, but he had one of the biggest wrestling comebacks, now the talk of the industry. It is PCO. Sir, it's very good to have you on the show.
Hey, it's great being on the show with you. I'm very happy to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
So I've got to ask you, the initial question would be that, obviously people before knew you as one of the Quebecers. You'd been in WWF, all that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it seemed PCO came around. This crazy maniac who's, bending frying pans and doing mental workouts, and everybody was talking about you. What led to the change into the PCO character? How did you come up with it? Because it's something that got everyone talking.
Well, since I was like 14 years old, I always wanted to impact pro wrestling the way that I'm doing it this year. But for the last 3 years, basically, it started in 2017, but really got bigger in 2018, and 2019 has been like unbelievable so far. It's been great. I always wanted to impact the wrestling industry like that, but I guess talent was there. There was a lot of things that were there, but I think I missed, probably missed out on like things that I do much better now, much more like a lot of discipline. At a younger age, sometimes you feel like you might be in your prime, but you don't put that much as much work as you should sometimes, and I have the chance to, to be able to do that, and then to really like, get up at 5 in the morning and have the gym for the first time, and do all kinds of work like trampoline and things like that, and the character came along with all the hard work and everything. It just happened by, I had that dream, that goal set up in my mind since 14, the age of 14. So, it was just a burning desire that was always there, but it was just a few things missing around it. And then suddenly, was being able to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And that's why it's so big, because I had to go through so much failures, and a lot of times I failed, trying things and doing things and having matches and having discussions with all kinds of federations and promotions. But the good thing that I did about it, I was never mad at the promotion, or I was never angry at promoters or promotions, because at the end of the day, I was the one probably responsible for not having so much success. So I was capable of putting, everything that was missing. And I had to ask myself so many times, what do I need? What more do I need to do? And because I've done a lot, but it's a long thing, a long process to explain, but that's what it is.
No, and it's interesting because obviously you had kind of left wrestling a few years ago, and then you came back. Did you initially plan to retire and just not come back? Was there something that changed your mind and made you want to come back? Because you don't often hear of guys retiring or going away and then coming back and having this huge new character.
Well, the thing about that retirement, it was never a really a retirement, because what happened, it's like 2008, I had like a tryout in Birmingham, England, against Tommy Dreamer for WWE, and it was so. I mean, the match was good and everything, but the executives came back to me saying, okay, there is no plans, we don't have anything for you. In 2003, I had like a great dark match on the Raw in Montreal, my hometown, and I tore the roof up. And 2 weeks after that, John Laurinaitis called me and said, we don't have anything for you. 2005, I was supposed to open up Raw again on a dark match against a student from Jacques Rougeau's student, and in the office wanted a 5 minute match, and Jacques wanted me to have a 12 minute match, but I was telling him that I'm not deciding the time frame of the Raw show, it's the office. And so they decided just to pull out, not to do the match, so I had to be do an interview. And like I said, 2008, I did the Tommy Dreamer match and went good. And I had another match in Mulligan Sun Arena, everything that I had set up for myself to show the office and everything was very ahead of time, very creative. And people were looking at me like I was a little bit weird. And then all the offices watching the match and didn't like what they saw. So I was supposed to work, you know, two nights. And I was supposed to do the Monday Night Raw and then the Tuesday in SmackDown. And after this, you just don't come to Philadelphia tomorrow. Just go back home, drive the car back. So it was like a 16 or 20 hour drive. And just I was very down about it. And then like around 2011, well, after that big failure there, I felt like, I didn't know from where to start again, for where to go. I had been in England, I had been in Germany, I had been like all over the place, and it was not happening. So it just felt like I was doing a radio interview, almost like I'm doing like yours right now. And I was just telling the host that, I think this might be it for me. You know, I think there's, I can't see how I can come back. And by saying that, it felt like, okay, they wrote it everywhere that I retired. But to me, it was just a way to keep the desire, the goal in my mind, but let go. You know, just let go. Don't try to force your own will into the way that things going to happen, but let go. And then it took a few years, and then I saw like, okay, I said that's true. And then I asked him if he wanted to train me. And when he said yes, I knew I was on my way to make a great comeback. I just felt it. It was just one of those things where I let go and I was waiting for what's going to be next, because pretty much all the doors were closed at that point, and I didn't know from where to start. And then I crossed him in the gym, asked him if he wanted to train me. So from that point on, I was already doing a little bit of indies, and then we went with the deck of cards, with the fry pan, and the training, and everything else, and getting in shape and things like that. And it went straight to the WrestleMania weekend 2018 against Walter, and then it blew up from there. And since then, it never stopped.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I was in New Orleans last year for WrestleMania weekend, and I wasn't at Spring Break, but a couple of my friends had went to that show. And when they came back that night at like 2 in the morning, all they were talking about was PCO, PCO, PCO. And I didn't click that it was you yet until I read everything, but everybody was talking about you. So how important do you think that match with Walter at Spring Break was last year to sort of making the statement that everyone should be sort of checking you out now?
Well, it was very, very important. It was like a turning moment in my career, because right now I'm having like the greatest success of my career. And I mean, when I'm saying the greatest success, I'm saying like Villain Enterprises, the way we're established and the success that we've got, and the faction is so strong that it's the strongest, And the way that we portrayed it in that faction of Villain Enterprises, it's very strong. So, and the Frankenstein, the French Canadian Frankenstein, is such a strong character, and it's an extension of who really PCO is. It's really what I am in life on a larger scale a little bit, but it's not far from the truth. You know, that's the guy that I am. You know, I'm taking risk. I'm a little bit crazy. I do things differently, and I'm pretty like willing to do anything, you know, in order to achieve what I want to achieve, and even to use my body as a weapon. You know, so that's pretty much myself. That's why it's so good and it works so well, because it's an extension of my identity, of my personality, of the person that I am. It's not a role that I have to play. It's myself. So that's why this is so strong, and that's why this is the, like I said, with adding discipline, with adding, you know, so much more work. It's like, you know, my focus is totally on pro wrestling. I mean, I don't go out, I don't party, I don't take some time off. All my life is focused on wrestling, not on girls, not on partying, not on drinking beers, not on, wasting times, talking at the gym for hours for nothing, or talking about, you know, things that have nothing to do with pro wrestling. Everything is like, it's about pro wrestling and it's about my career. I mean, other than the time that I spend with my daughter, the rest of my life, it's all about pro wrestling. So the focus is 150% on pro wrestling right now. And that's why I'm having so much success. And that's why I didn't have so much success before, because when I got to WWF or WWE, I was like 24, 25 years old. And when I got there, I was dealing with fame, money, and, you know, being on TV every week and being a personality, a celebrity. And it took my focus out of my goal of becoming
Hello? Hi, sorry, there's a weird beeping noise there. We're back now.
Yeah, sorry. It took the focus out of becoming, you know, the greatest pro wrestler in the history of wrestling, or the greatest wrestler of my era, or becoming the biggest draw, or the biggest star, or the biggest star. And because the focus was out, because when I thought I was already there, and then all the efforts that I made to get there, when I got there, I got distracted by all the traps that comes with this business. And that's why people don't understand. They think, you know, my talent was wasted or things like that. But it's not what it was. It was just human nature, where having success at a certain level at a certain age, and just my focus got out of the direction that I was aiming to go on the course of becoming popular. That's what happened sometimes.
Well, I was also going to ask you, when you have that match with Walter at Spring Break, like, do you feel it during the match that this is the match that people are going to be talking about, or was it only when you went backstage or got back to the hotel that night that you saw everybody was talking about it? Like, when did you realize what a big impact that match was going to have on your career?
Well, for me, like, the way that everything got set up, it's like, I worked in Indiana for a promotion called Black Label Pro in January. And the promoter was calling me like around like 3 or 4 months prior to that in 2017. And he was saying, okay, I want to bring you in Indiana. But it's, do you want to do January 13 or April 21st? And I knew where I wanted to be for April 21st. And I said January 13, and it was a big snowstorm in Montreal, and I barely made it to Indiana. And I had a match against Holly or Ethan Page, and Joey Janela was there. So that match kind of set up, because Joey asked me if I wanted to do the spring break against Walter. So I knew from January 13 all the way to April 21st that I was going to wrestle Walter. So all those months, to me, it was my WrestleMania moment. That was my WrestleMania main event. To me, in my mind, this was the match of my life. So, and, I was just starting back and things like that. So they said, would you mind just driving there? Because, you know, we're just starting, you know, we don't have that much of a budget. So we'll if you want, we'll pay for your gas and things like that. We'll give you a good payoff. So I drove there. You know, after, you know, so many years in the business and things like that, I knew that match was going to be maybe the turning point in my life and my career. And I drove there. And it was like 40-some hours to get there. Didn't sleep. I did that match and came back 40-some hours, come back. It was like 80 hours of driving cars just for one match. And I knew it was going to be the match of my life. So, well, one of the matches of my life. I mean, I knew it was going to be a turning point in my life.
And it certainly was. And you've gone from strength to strength after that. You were part of PWG's Battle of Los Angeles last year. What was that like going to this kind of big indie tournament event thing where, you know, most of the guys there are high-flying younger guys and you come in to be a part of it? What was that atmosphere like, and did you feel that was another bit of momentum for you?
Yeah, I knew it was going to be like, it gave me the chance to do the Steve Austin podcast, which was cool because I hadn't speak with Steve Austin for almost like last time was 1997, last time that we had a chat together. So it'd been a long time. So just going and being on the Austin podcast was one of my goals too. So in the meantime, it's like I was knocking two birds at once. You know, in the meantime, I was doing like, you know, one of the most prestigious tournaments in the world, you know, Battle of Los Angeles. And it was good because it was like people after, you know, the Walter match, this Joe Janela's thing break too, it was like the crowd were really pushing my names for every event. I remember they had like also a survey for the NWA belt, and my name was popping out like crazy. And my name was popping out for the Bullet tournament. And finally got invited. And it was a great window. And even in between, after WrestleMania and in between Bola, it's like, I was on four shows a week for every promotion in the United States, and like I had demands in UK as well, Germany. I went to WXW, I went back to WXW because I'd been there before. It was like phone was off the hook ringing all the time, so it was crazy.
And then obviously you would announce that you've signed with Ring of Honor, and before we kind of talk about Ring of Honor, it must have been kind of cool for you that, you know, you come back to wrestling, you put in all that work, you're getting up at 5 a.m. going to the gym, you're driving 40 hours to New Orleans, and then all these people are bidding for you. All these people want to sign you, and at this stage of your career, how was that for you, and why ultimately did you choose ROH?
Oh, I chose ROH because they showed a lot of interest in me. I mean, I had every companies that exist, major companies, we were in touch. I was in touch with every one of them. But I chose ROH because they were the one that were the more serious in their approach on every level, on the human side, on the business side, and on the creative side. And it was the company that we had the most continuous talk, you know, over time, you know, for almost 2 weeks. You know, we almost had like a call each other like maybe every other day or twice or three times a week, you know, so you know, for 3 weeks or two, 3 weeks. But it was like other phone calls made before that or texts that was sent before that. So when we came to the agreement, it was a win-win situation. Both sides were happy and both sides got what they wanted. And then they approached me with the Villain Enterprises idea and not changing anything about what I was doing. And I said, keep on doing videos and they like that, and they just wanted to enhance, you know, the PCO character and French Canadian Frankenstein and all that. They were just gonna make it look even better and stronger and cooler. So it was a no-brainer for me. I decided to go with Ring of Honor.
And obviously, being in Villain Enterprises with you and Marty Scurll and Brody King, it feels like quite a natural fit when you see you three guys together. Why do you think that the chemistry just works so well with you guys? And was that something that was discussed before you signed that doing that faction?
Because what was cool about it is the fact that in 2008, like I told you, I was touring in England, and then Marty hadn't been for a very long period of time in the business, and was kind of new into the game, and I was working full time in England, so I got to be on many shows with Marty. We got to know each other a little bit, and I got to know Nick Aldis as well. They were good friends together, and I got along really good with them. And Brody King, I mean, in 2018, we had feuds, for different promotions, and we worked even Bola against each other, and we had killer matches. Like, we killed it a bunch of times, and we had fun working against each other, wrestling each other. So when they told me that they wanted to put this package together, I said, geez, the chemistry is going to be already there. I know Brody King, and I've known Marty. So it's going to be it's going to be cool, because we don't have to get to know each other. We already know each other, kind of, so the chemistry was already there. So it was like, from first match on, it was like already, could tell like it was going to be good. So that's why, like I said, it was not hard for me to make that decision, because I knew all the guys involved, and I was like, yes, let's go for it. I believe in that.
And you guys have gone from strength to strength so far, and obviously you and Brody won the ROH World Tag Team titles. And I just wondered for you, a lot of people, I guess, over here in the UK and across certain parts of the world know you mostly as a tag team wrestler and the Quebecers and stuff. How cool was it for you to, at this stage in the game, with all the work you'd put into the comeback, becoming a tag team champion again on such a big stage?
Yeah, I mean, this is great, but I don't see us like as a tag team. Like, I was part of a tag team before us, because sometimes I tag with Marty. Sometimes we're in a six-man tag. We also won the six-man tag World Tag Team Championship for ROH, or like we're
You won
like
in
top
the next night.
dog. Yeah. So we got those two championships. And with Marty and Brody, and sometimes it's gonna be me and Marty tagging, or the three of us together, and sometimes it's gonna be a single match, like me against Mike Briscoe, or it goes everywhere. It's not specifically okay tag team, but yeah, we're a good tag team, but we're like three solo guys that can work well together. It's instead of just being like, okay, the Road Warriors, they're a tag team. Demolition, they're a tag team. But us, it's like, okay, they can be solo, they could be single, it could be Marty and PCO, it could be Brody and Marty, it could be PCO and Brody King, and then I think Marty's gonna get the, maybe he's gonna work hard to get the world title. And then after that, we need like the TV title, the world TV title, and we can get all the titles in between our factions. So that's the goal, to get all the titles between the three of us. It doesn't matter who gets what, we want to get all the titles.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing I was going to ask you about is obviously now you and Brody are going to be facing off against Tangaloa and Tamatonga at the MSG show. How again? What are you thinking going into this? That it's a sold out Madison Square Garden show, WrestleMania weekend, huge show, and you're going into it as a tag team champion.
Yeah, I mean, this is gonna top all my moments. I mean, I was part of the WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden but this is going to top it all. I mean, this is going to top my WrestleMania moment. This is going to be bigger than the WrestleMania moment that I had, the match that I had at WrestleMania as a tag team champion. Going into the Madison Square Garden as a tag team champion, the place, the greatest place, probably one of the greatest places in the world, where, you know, Elvis Presley performed there, Madonna, you know, name every big name in the industry, artists, wrestlers, singer, comedians, whatever. They all been to the Madison Square Garden. It's one of the most prestigious places in the whole world to perform. And this was sold out in less than 20 minutes, 20,000 seats sold in less than 20 minutes. And going there as the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champion, I mean, because those belts, they mean a lot in ROH. You know, we've been main eventing the 17th anniversary, me and Brody King against the Briscoe. We were the main event, or the last match of that pay-per-view at that event. And so it's like, it's not just titles that are just there. They really mean something. They're really important to the fans. And it's going to be like one of the main matches at an MSG, and it's going to be so big. And also, all titles will be at stake, so it'll be incredible. It'll be a crazy night. And it is my favorite moment in pro wrestling. I've been to the Toronto Sky Dome in front of 45,000 people. I've been to the Royal Albert Hall in England, to the Budokan Hall in Japan. I've been all over the place and great buildings. But this one on April 6th with Ring of Honor is going to top it all.
And I mean, is it cool for you as well that not only did you, you know, 25 years on from having your WrestleMania match in Madison Square Garden, you also won the tag titles at one point with Jacques Rougeau in Madison Square Garden a couple of months before that. So you guys have, you've got a history in Madison Square Garden, and all these years later, you're now having like your big comeback. It's almost, you couldn't write it as well as it's playing out.
Yeah, I mean, also I had like main event matches. I mean, one of the main events against the Bret the Hitman Hart at the Madison Square Garden in New York. So, I've had like great moments there, but this one, like I said, this one means more because it's part of the comeback and part of my greatest run ever in my career. So that's why it means so much more.
And obviously, you've signed a 1-year contract with ROH. Have you got a longer term plan? Do you think you're going to want to keep going another few years? Have you got other achievements that you'd like to have in your career?
Well, I don't know how it's going to how everything's going to unfold, but of course, like my main goal, and I'm gonna keep on going until I reach it. I mean, I always had high goals for myself, but I feel like I can accomplish them. But it was like to really to be the guy, you know, for a period of time where, you know, I want to draw the biggest rating, draw the biggest crowd, sell the most merch, and impact the pro wrestling business as much as Stone Cold Steve Austin did, or The Rock, or Hulk Hogan. That's the end goal, and once that will be reached out and that will be manifest and accomplished, then I'll be able to go on into something else. But there's a lot of work to be done. So was just on the way, just on my way to get there. But it's a lot of work to get done. And also, when I say that, I mean, you know, you need a tremendous amount of talent around you in order to accomplish that. And I don't say that as being egotistical, but it's more as like when you have high goals and you want to accomplish something that sound like surreal, it's where you grow as a human being. And I think there's an order for everything. So it's not going to last forever, and it's not going to be there forever. But the amount of time that it's going to last, I think there's an order for each and every thing to happen. And that's why I wanted to do this. Maybe at one point when I was younger, it was maybe to get noticed, to get famous, to be able to say, oh, the girls, you know, get girls and things like that. But now it's just I want to fully grow as as a person, and fully like get me out of my comfort zone and make me do things that seems impossible. And just by doing it, I mean, that's how you feel rewarded in your life, and you feel like your life was worth something because you have accomplished things that nobody thought it would be possible. So it's just something personal with myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty inspirational story, you know, to come back and do what you've done. I just want to ask you two last questions before we let you go. Obviously, you had the career in the 90s and stuff in WBF. What was your kind of, I mean, you said earlier on you got to WBF when you were like in your 20s and a very different time. But what are your kind of favourite memories of being in the WBF in the 90s? And are there any moments that you still look back on really fondly and remember?
What do you mean? If there was like memories, like things that I learned from, and things that
Things that you learned from, or things that are like matches that you really remember, and you know that was one of your favorites. Just any sort of good memories or memories at all.
Yeah.
That you have.
Well, yeah. From everything bad that happened to me, I learned. That I was in the wrong as much as other guys might have been in the wrong, but I've learned that if you give. If someone hates you and you hate them back, the hate's going to get stronger. If someone hates you and you don't hate them back, well, it's like pushing against a wall. As soon as you stop pushing against a wall, there's no tension anymore. So that's what I learned about, the jealousy and all the hate in the back and things like that. It's like if you don't give something back to it, it's not going to last. So that's what I learned. As far as the good times that I had, winning the tag team championship belts, that was a good time because I had worked, you know, since I was 16 years old. And I got there, I was 24, 25 when I became the champion. So it was still 8 years in the making, you know, or something like that. And it was going through a rough time and calling my mom through Western Union, me some money from Puerto Rico, from different places in the world where I was starving, doing what I love the most, wrestling. And so finally, when I made it, it kind of turned into like a bad nightmare because I wasn't ready for it. So it was like I said, all the traps and everything, the fame and fortune and money. But in the long run, it made me who I am today. So I'm very fortunate and I'm very grateful that I've learned from all those mistakes, and I don't feel like bitter and sour about the whole thing, and then I don't blame the whole world for my misfortunes. I was capable of looking at myself in the mirror and saying, okay, you're responsible for everything that happened in your life. Stop blaming everyone else. Look at yourself and pick yourself back up and work your ass off. So that's what I learned. And the greatest moment I had was the championship belt, the feud with Bret Hart, and being on Bret Dungeon Collection, one of his favorite match, and him talking about, you know, me being talented and, you know, having the tools to do something big in wrestling, the wrestling business. I mean, this is like, and also the retirement match, the Jacques Rougeau retirement match, we worked on, we had the full roster there, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, Yokozuna, Undertaker, Jeff Jarrett, you name all the biggest name in the pro wrestling industry, they were on that card, and me and Jacques were main eventing that event, and we killed it big time, and Vince was there, and the whole office was there, and from that point on, they said, okay, this kid's got what it takes to make it, and if it wouldn't be by my own, like, for me using, and not using fully my potential and my talent, not working, kind of stopped working at it because I got distracted by so many other things while I was on top a little bit there. I lost track of my focus, like I said. But at least I got noticed and things like that. And this was one of the greatest moments of my life. 25 main eventing, the home building where Montreal Canadiens, the most, decorated franchise in sports with the New York Yankees in baseball and Montreal Canadiens in ice hockey. So it's one of the greatest building too. So it was like, this has been one of my favorite moments also.
Yeah, and it's you've and now you're going to Madison Square Garden all these years later, the next big stage of the comeback. One other thing I just wanted to ask you about quickly, because it popped up in my time feed the other day when I completely forgotten about it. You were in 1998, you were in the Brawl for All tournament briefly, and I know that a lot of fans kind of wondered about the Brawl for All tournament in terms of ended up injuring a lot of guys and all that kind of stuff. What was your memory of being in the Brawl for All tournament? Did you guys think it was a good idea at the time, or were you guys just kind of going along with it because that's what was going to happen? Because it's quite a strange thing to look back on that they did this kind of worked shoot tournament.
Well, it was a full shoot tournament. It was no work. I mean, the only thing that was worked was like, and it wasn't work. It was like maybe let's say I was facing like Dr. Death, Steve Williams in the first round, and the Hawk of the Old Lawyers came to me and says, BCO, if you don't want to get hurt, when Steve's gonna tag you, you can take a dive and just pick up your $5,000, and so you won't have to fight him. And I told him, I said, you know what? I'm gonna get paid anyway, so just tell him that he's in for the fight of his life, and I'm not gonna lay down for him. He's gonna have to kick my ass. He's gonna have to knock me out. So it was like that tension that built right there because, but I knew if he wanted me to take a dive, it's because he was a little bit scared that it might get knocked out or something like that. If not, he wouldn't ask for that. But other than the boys talking to the boys and trying to get advantage like that, it was not a work. It was a shoot. It was a full shoot. So and a lot of guys got injured and jaw broken and tear their legs out like quads or biceps of the legs and things like that. So there was and also it didn't really enhance the guys at all, and it made us pretty much all made us look pretty bad. So it wasn't a great idea, but it was something where I got called up, a week prior, before the tournament started, and they sold it to me like it was the greatest idea in the world, and I would have to fight Steve Williams, and he was a guy who was designed to win the whole thing. And by surprise to the office, but not to the boys, Bart Gunn won the whole thing. But at one point, I thought I could win it, I felt like I could have won it, but I didn't have time to prepare, and at that point in my life, I was, I was not ready for, I wasn't disciplined as I am today.
And then just my very last thing I want to ask you is there any opponent that you've got your eyes on that you still want to have a match with that you've not been able to face yet?
Not really, like, I think everyone in the ROH roster is super talented. There's so much talent in there. It's incredible. It's probably the best, the best roster I've seen. You know, there's so many good names. But you know, whoever they're gonna put in front of me, I'm gonna deal with it. But I don't want to prejudice no one over anyone else and forget to say names or say names and just in all fairness, I wouldn't mind getting in front of anyone. You know, there's every single talent. It's pretty exciting to be there.
Well, listen, I wish you nothing but the best at Madison Square Garden and in the future. It's great to see you having such a great comeback. But where can people keep up with you, see your videos, check out where you're going to be? Can you plug your Twitter and anything else that you want to plug?
Yeah, if you want to follow my journey and follow me, and I'm very, very proactive, very interactive with all the fans. On my Twitter account, the PCO is not human. And just follow me on the Twitter account. Also from there, you have access to all my other social media platforms. But my Facebook, my personal Facebook is sold out. I've got no room to add friends. But I've got a fan page, and I got also where PCO is not human on Instagram. But my main platform is Twitter. So thank you very much.
Well, yeah, again, wish you the best of luck, and it's great to see your comeback.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity to be on your podcast, on your show. And, yeah, hopefully I'll see you down the road, and I want to say hi to everybody that are listening to your show, and wish everyone all the best, and wish yourself also all the best, and good luck.
You're a gentleman. Thank you very much.